Outside the rear of St. Matthew's are two trees, an oak and a puhutukawa, symbolizing the two spiritual traditions, English and Maori, which continue to influence us. This morning I want to talk a little about the oak, the English Anglican spiritual tradition, which came to this land in the 1800s. For those early missionaries, it wasn't a matter of trying to replicate the Church of England in these green and pleasant lands. They sought instead to create something new and better than England, and they succeeded. When the Reverend Samuel Marsden, through the interpretation of Chief Ruatara, first preached in Aotearoa on December the 25th, 1814, he knowingly and unknowingly brought gifts. Marsden was an evangelical. He believed that by introducing Maori to the Bible and prayer book in their own language, he would introduce them to God. Evangelicals believe in the power of the written word and therefore put great store on literacy and translation. The gift of literacy opens up for us the worlds of others' imagination and reasoning. It is still, despite the dominance of visual media, the key to unlocking the boundaries of parochialism. Spiritually, literacy can take us beyond ourselves, opening possibilities, challenging assumptions, and plunging us into the limitless God. In the best of the evangelical tradition, there is a touch of anarchy. If you give someone a Bible and say, "Discover God for yourself," you are relinquishing control. The Church of England, like the state to which it is wedded, has been historically concerned about control. God was kept on a tight leash, only to be addressed by the theologically certified and episcopally approved. The Church Missionary Society, CMS, who backed Marsden's venture, often kept the leash slack, except in moral matters. Allied to this disregard for rigidity, dislike of bureaucracy, and ambivalence about control, the evangelicals valued the participation of laity and clergy, women and men. The CMS had egalitarian tendencies. The Anglican Church in Aotearoa, New Zealand, is today highly participatory, democratic, and innovative compared with Mother England. Partly this is due to the CMS influence, partly to Bishop Selwyn and his visionary model for the Church of England that he constructed here. And partly it is due to the many women and men, Maori and Pākehā, who have guided our church since. Our theology, liturgy, and governance have been shaped not just by the traditions of old, but by what worked for us, what made sense to us, and what justice demanded. Is it any surprise, therefore, that New Zealand was one of the leaders in the quest for the ordination of women to the priesthood? This spiritual gift I am talking about could be symbolized with a piece of number 8 fencing wire. It is the Kiwi can-do attitude. We make things happen, even if the imported components are faulty. What we care about is community, about helping our neighbours and giving each other a fair go. If transplanted religion doesn't quite fit with our cares, we modify the religion, not our cares. We change the rules to fit the people, rather than change the people to fit the rules. We value what works, rather than what's always been done. When small rural communities in the 1970s, for example, were burdened with the upkeep of multiple denominational church buildings. They joined together and left the hierarchies to worry about the theological niceties. The CMS egalitarian tendencies in turn gave rise to social concern and justice. One can think of William Wilberforce, for example, who was a great influence on Marsden. Wilberforce's concerns included slavery, of course, but also the treatment of animals, the literacy of children, and the control of vice. The concern for social justice in the 19th century was expressed in a very paternalistic, we know best way. However, that concern in time gave birth to the social work agencies of today, like our neighbour, the City Mission, and the justice-centred political stances of our church, as evidenced in the Hikoi of Hope and anti-tour movements. New Zealand spirituality has long known, almost instinctively, the difference between power and wisdom. Whether someone was a prime minister, a bishop, or a local minister, their position of power did not make them wise. It was rather what they did and said. We expect of our leaders people who can understand us, regardless of their intellectual or business acumen. We expect, too, our spiritual leaders to be forthright in defending the vulnerable and criticizing the powerful. Politics and religion have always mixed, but thankfully not always smoothly. George Augustus Selwyn arrived here in 1842, having been consecrated the year before at Lambeth as Bishop of New Zealand. Like Marsden, he brought enthusiasm, prodigious energy, versatility, and organizational nous to the task. His first visitation was characteristic. In 6 months, Selwyn visited every settlement and mission station in the North Island. He travelled 3,664 kilometres, 1,900 by ship, 400 in canoes, 134 on horseback, and 1,226 on foot. He spread the English broad church notion that the church was there for everyone. It was not just a club for the religiously minded. Like the CMS, Selwyn valued the participation of the laity and their financial support. When the first constitution was drafted in 1857, it radically gave the clergy representatives. When the first constitution was drafted in 1857, it radically gave the lay representatives the same voting rights as the clergy. Similarly, too, to the CMS, Selwyn had a paternal, evangelistic, and social concern towards Māori. He was critical of the government's land policy, and this infuriated many European settlers. His inclusive educational vision at St. John's, giving equal opportunity of education and spiritual nourishment to settler as well as to Māori, also provoked many settlers and even clergy to be quite hostile. Selwyn was of the English broad church tradition and not an evangelical. He introduced clergy to the country who represented a wide range of churchmanship. Though there were some fierce arguments, especially with the CMS, Selwyn didn't seem to be threatened by difference. Amongst the clergy were men like Frederick Thatcher, John Kinder, and Arthur Purchas. The beauty of neo-Gothic architecture, as seen in the Selwyn churches and surrounding us here in St. Matthew's, and the sublime music of the English choral tradition were introduced. Painting, photography, poetry, medicine, geology, all were manifestations of the glory of God. This spiritual gift is an appreciation of beauty wherever it is to be found, whether it is architecture, music, movement, or poetry. Our English heritage inspires us. It also challenges us to go on creating beauty in our worship, buildings, music, and language. Today, that appreciation extends eclectically across our numerous cultures and art forms. Part of this gift of appreciation is realizing, too, that all learning is an opportunity to excite the soul with wonder and mystery. The oak in Aotearoa, English Anglican spirituality in this land, is very different from England. A spiritual visit to the Church of England, while initially inspiring with the architecture and music, can soon deteriorate when confronted with the liturgy, elitism, and theological blindness one can easily find. The English people, of course, are wonderful. It is just that their past sometimes seems more a burden than a blessing, an encouragement to stagnate rather than to be creative. A spiritual visit can also awaken in us fresh appreciation of the gifts our English forebears in the faith bequeathed. They helped found a church that values beauty, imagination, and innovation. A church that delights in finding ways around problems, ways that include rather than exclude difference. A church that stands up to the powerful and criticizes them. A church that is broad and that is there at its best for everyone, not just for the morally and religiously sanctioned. The oak stands beside the Pohutukawa, proudly on our soil, and justly so.